This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Siviso. The April 2013 collapse of the Rana Plaza factory building in Bangladesh killed thousands of people and left thousands more injured. It also brought worldwide attention to the appalling working conditions of garment factory workers who produce clothing for the world's retail stores. The Fashion Revolution movement was born from this incident and called for accountability in the process of making clothes. And I'm joined by Sasi Bai Kimis and Laura Francois from Fashion Revolution Malaysia, who made, and we're going to be discussing who made my clothes, the Fashion Revolution for Sustainability. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are you today?
Thank you.
You know, I had a clip for everybody, but I'm going to go into that in just a short while because it didn't quite fire off. But anyway, let's go into the Rana Plaza factory building collapse. Can you just give me a quick overview as to what really happened and then why the both of you decided then that you needed to set up Fashion Revolution Malaysia?
Well, Fashion Revolution is actually not started by us. I mean, it's a global movement that was actually started by two women called Carrie Summers and Ursula de Castro. And so the collapse actually happened, and Laura can add in. It was a factory, and it was overfilled. The building standards, building code was really poor. And there were actually already cracks on that day the collapse happened. So the employees had actually mentioned that, you know, we don't want to work today because the cracks are getting worse and worse. But because producers were under so much pressure to make products so cheap by the brands and the designers, that their bosses said, no, you have to work because that's the only way we can produce at such a low cost. So the movie that we're going to be showing on Thursday, The True Cost, is exactly about this.
Yeah, and I think incidences like Rana Plaza, I mean, the story of Rana Plaza was not, this was not the first time that factories were, you know, they were not being taken care of, and there was a lot of pressure from producers. And I think the specifics of Rana Plaza is what really, that story shook the world. You know, the images, the videos. I think for the first time, a lot of people woke up and realized that, you know, this is inhumane. And this is the clothing that I'm wearing. People would recognize the brands that were mentioned in those news stories. And I think even though that was a story that was, you know, told before, that was the first time where a lot of people just realized the depth of what was going on.
Mm-hmm. And the both of you decided to bring Fashion Revolution, the Malaysian chapter, here. Yeah. What's your background and why did you decide to do this? I mean, you obviously feel very strongly for it.
I mean, for me, it's, you know, when I started Earth Air is when I myself began to educate myself about why there's a need for ethical fashion. I mean, I used to be one of those people who would go to H&M every weekend and buy back bags of clothes because it was cheap. And when I started Earth Air, I realized there is a cost to what I'm buying and I don't know who is paying for it. So do I want to keep doing that and buying these products? So we actually started this in June last year. So this is the first Fashion Revolution week. So Fashion Revolution Day is actually April 24th. So the whole week sort of covers events around Rana Plaza. And I mean, when Laura was saying earlier, one of the biggest reasons why Rana Plaza was a big issue is because almost 1,000 people died. So it's probably the largest disaster in the fashion industry.
And that doesn't account for all of those who were injured, thousands more who are now unable to work.
Do you think it has made a difference to the industry? Because we do know a lot of luxury brands do have factories in places like Bangladesh. Do you think it has made a difference?
I think the amazing thing that did come out of it was Fashion Revolution. It did kickstart this global movement towards awareness and, you know, people starting to ask themselves, consumers asking themselves, who made my clothes? Who is the human? What is the human face behind what I'm wearing? But unfortunately, I don't think it has really made, the ripple effect hasn't gone far enough. Mm-hmm. It hasn't permeated into the entire industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think we don't understand how it affects us on a personal level.
Yes.
We know it's a catastrophe, It has something to do with the fashion world being responsible for it. But we don't see ourselves in this whole picture.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, one of the things that we think is that fast fashion is very related to the same concept as fast food. So, you know, like,
well, how would you define fast fashion, Sasibai?
I mean, it's pretty much disposable clothing. So, you know, we think that it's clothing that materials are badly made. The process is not fair. The labor is not fair. And it's pretty much just cheap. So we've grown up in this culture where there's a huge consumption desire, you know? So we think that I should be able to buy a t-shirt for one ringgit if I want to. But does that even cover the cost of the material? And if it's one ringgit, then what did the person who made it actually get paid? And I think that was one of the big issues that came out in the Rana Plaza collapse, was that the people who died were making about 10 US dollars a month. So equivalent to about 40 ringgit a month. You can't survive on that. So it's this level of cruelty that, you know, that has come across. And I think, I'm not going to say that all fast fashion is cruel, but I think, you know, fast fashion is the fact that we think it's disposable and it's cheap. So we don't care about if, you know, we don't want it anymore. So, you know, you might buy it and 10 minutes later decide, oh, I don't like this anymore. Yeah. I'm just going to throw it away.
Because it was cheap.
Exactly.
But Laura, you said, you know, we should ask ourselves pertinent questions before even buying. But what do we look out for? Because all I see is made in China, made in Bangladesh, made in wherever. It doesn't tell me anything more than that. So how do we find out more?
Well, it's a really tough situation for all the consumers, and I mean, including myself. You know, I'm advocating for this, but I still need to clothe myself in the morning, and that's tough. So the first thing is really just looking at the tag. You know, all tags will say made in India, made in Bangladesh, made in somewhere, and just being conscious about that. But the other thing is, you know, buying in itself is unsustainable. The rate at which we buy is not something that is healthy for the planet and for people. So before you even need to buy and look at the tag, ask yourself, do you really need it? Mm-hmm. Is this something you're going to wear more than once?
Yeah.
And because even if you buy, you know, every day at ethical stores, that doesn't mean that you are, you know, that still means you're contributing to this problem. So reducing before you even buy, to me, that's number one.
What constitutes an ethical store?
You mean an ethical brand?
Yes.
I mean,
because you have, you know, a whole lot of luxury brands claiming to be ethical brands. But what does that really mean?
I mean, the continuum is long, but, you know, it can be broken down into a few components: materials, process, and labor. So within these three, everybody, every brand will have various level of being ethical or sustainable. So I don't think there's any brand out there making anything that is 100% ethical. And I think that's not what we're trying to say here. We're not saying that everyone has to be a saint. We're just advocating that, you know what, before you buy something, ask a few questions to yourself and about how you think that product may have been made. That's really it. We're just trying to advocate for ethical consumption. So if you are going to consume something, you might want to know who made it, how you made it, how it was made. And of course, you know, there isn't that level of transparency right now. So if you want to know how your Apple iPhone was made, you'd have to ask Apple and you have to email them and be like, okay, guys, I know, was this made in Foxconn? Did I contribute to the suicides?
Yes.
Right? So, but no one is asking those questions. So how do we start? We have to start somewhere. And I think that's what we're trying to say.
So what you're saying indirectly is also that it does not necessarily mean transparency leads to best practices in manufacturing, because it's hard to really find out throughout the whole chain, isn't it? As you said, going back to materials, going back to the process, going back to labor. And in there's a flip side to all of this. If you go back to the Rana factory, they've gone back to actually have a check, and they found that quite a number of people are still jobless. Those who who were involved in that collapse of the factory. Of course, 1,000 people died, but the rest of them are still jobless. How would you address that? I mean, these are people now who don't even have that 40 ringgit a day.
I think that's a very interesting issue because it's actually mentioned in the movie as well, you know, in terms of like people who actually say that sweatshops are good because it's giving them a job, which is better than not having a job.
Yep.
Right. But however, I think the question is not whether they have it, you know, it's better than nothing, because I think that having a job in a factory where you can die is not an alternative.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's been claimed that, you know, at least they're not working in a coal mine. But the reality is we don't know the working conditions in which they're working. So it could very well be just as dangerous. We don't really know.
Yep. And, you know, there's some of us who buy clothing and it says made in India, made in Indonesia. And you already have this feeling that, you know what, by buying this, in a way, I'm contributing towards the livelihood of the people in Indonesia or even India. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
It's just that we don't know, in terms of safety and all of that, we don't know much about that.
Right? Yeah, and neither do the brands necessarily. That's the other, you know, even if we demand for the information, the supply chain is so long and often very obscure to even the brand themselves. So they know where it's being manufactured, but they don't really know who's working there or what it's like or even where the clothing is being sourced from. Where's the material from? How's the cotton grown? I mean, it goes so far as the seed that's being planted in the cotton field. So that's really, really hard to track.
Do you think it's difficult for us to make ethical and sustainable decisions when it comes to purchasing in Malaysia, for an example?
I mean, as a consumer in Malaysia, one of the things that I look at is definitely, I mean, I read the labels, I look at whether I can't control everything and I can't reject something because it's not completely natural. But I try the best that I can to look for natural biodegradable materials. So I look for cotton or silk or wool instead of polyester and nylon, because synthetic fabrics have a much, much bigger environmental and human impact. So, I mean, that's what I tell everyone, you know, and people say, hey, but it's so expensive.
I was just going to say, you know, that every time I look and I'm like, I want to buy this, but then, yeah. Oh no, but the other one's cheaper. So then what do we do? We're all trying to get our money to, you know, do as much as it can for us. But, you know, given the situation, then you are tempted to buy the cheaper one, option.
And I think we were talking about that earlier. We were saying, you know, we really want people to focus on quality. So in the same way that you would buy something that's quality, but it costs more, but you know that this is going to last you longer. So it kind of goes back to, like, thinking about maybe our parents' generation. I know that, you know, my dad said when they were growing up, they didn't have this many clothes that people have today. They had a lot less, but they had quality clothes that would last them for a long time. And, you know, and that's kind of how we need to be thinking about how we use our clothes. It's not about just buying cheap things and throwing it away.
I mean, I think it's a knock-on effect of consumption and supply as well, isn't it? Because we have started to consume more, which has in a way put pressure on large organizations who used to use sustainable stuff before, having to then contract out their manufacturing to other countries. I mean, certain, you know, UK brands, for an example, I'm not going to mention any of it, we used to hold in such high esteem. You know, my God, I own a piece from this place. Mm-hmm. But then now when you look at that, where it's made, it's no longer made in the UK. Mm. It's made somewhere in this part of the world. So they are under pressure as well because of our consumption pattern.
They're under pressure. Well, I wouldn't say it's from our consumption pattern. I would probably say it's from, you know, capitalism and the fact that we demand, you know, investors demand returns. So as you keep demanding increasing returns, they have to keep figuring out how to make things cheaper and cheaper and cheaper to get shareholders what they need. So it's actually a much bigger issue. And of course, we're not going to solve all of this.
No.
But I think what we're trying to say is in the everyday consumption habits that we make, and that can go to even food and everything else that we buy. Mm. Right, Laura?
Yeah. because even just thinking about the most polluting industries, you know, you think of driving your car, the agriculture industry, but we don't really think about fashion, and it is the third largest polluting industry in the world. So, you know, the second or third, I mean, if you think of agriculture as well. It's up in the top. So that's really, really something that we don't, it's not common.
No, it's not even in our subconscious. we're not thinking about it at all. So it's interesting to know more about fashion revolution. We'll come back up next. I want to ask you about the expose by Peter on two certain luxury brands. Just came out, I think, a day or two ago. I wanted to, you know, get your thoughts on that one coming up next. If you have a question for the ladies from Fashion Revolution Malaysia, text 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's Live and Learn, and we have the two ladies from Fashion Revolution Malaysia, Laura Francois and Sassy by Kimis. I always get that wrong. Am I saying it right?
Well, you're just thinking of reasons. That's why.
No, I'm sorry, Kimis. It's a very unique name, I have to say. Laura, I'm assuming you're French. Francois is very French. And they have a huge industry in France as far as fashion is concerned.
I wouldn't know. I'm actually Canadian, but
French-Canadian.
Yes. Okay. And, well, Canada, I mean, we, same as the US, we buy and rebuy in the same amounts, same quantities, unfortunately.
Yeah. The reason I ask is because the French are very proud of the fashion industry. Oudouvi is what they say. How do you translate that?
Oh gosh, it's just pride for the look, for the, you know, coming. You know what you wear is who you are, and it's the first thing you see when you look at someone, right? So, you know, thinking about what I wear in the morning is who I am, and in a very, very true way. What you wear is who you are. Yep. And that even permeates to, you know, what we're talking about right now in terms of, you know, if you make certain decisions, it is the first thing that you see, and it's the best foot forward that you want to put. So making those conscious decisions is making conscious decisions about how others will, you know, we'll look at you.
Yes. We're discussing the revolution of sustainable fashion. Fashion Revolution Malaysia is actually the Malaysian chapter. Which, when did it begin? When did you decide to bring it here?
Well, I contacted Fashion Revolution in middle of last year. So we officially sort of brought it in last year. But we had missed the last Fashion Revolution week. So we've kind of been actually Laura and I only met this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I was so happy that I met someone else who felt as passionate as I did about this. And so we decided, you know, let's actually do something significant this year in Malaysia for the week. And so Laura is actually leading a lot of activity in Penang. And then we're jointly working on KL for this Thursday.
Okay, so 21st of April, what you heard just now was a clip from the movie The True Cost, which is based on the Rana Plaza factory building collapse in Bangladesh in 2013. And that is in relation to the whole fashion industry. And for you to just think about, ask yourself certain questions when you decide to buy clothes. I think I'm not thinking about it. For me, I know I just go there and cost is one. Two, does it look nice on me? And that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should just ask ourselves a few more questions. One of the things I wanted to get your thoughts on, yesterday we did a show with Peter, a very short interview with Peter, because they came up with an expose of ostrich farming, ostrich leather industry in particular, in relation to two brands, Hermes being one and Prada being the other. So they're organizing, I think, probably as we speak right now, a sort of a protest in a Pavilion Mall this evening at both the outlets. I mean, what are your thoughts on things like this?
I mean, I was aware of a crocodile farm in South Africa that was also exposed, that Hermes was sourcing from. And the farmers there were actually beating the crocodiles. They were torturing them. I think, you know, here we're kind of trying to go against the tide of luxury advertising marketing, right? I mean, because all of that has created this world where these products are desirable. So we just desire the status of what that product is going to give us. And so I think what Peter is trying to do here is that status is coming at a cost. And I'm, you know, and before this expose happened, Hermès may not actually have even known how this farm was treating the ostriches. So I hope that more of these sort of exposés come about, because that's the only way that brands will be more responsible and in their sourcing, and make sure that they put in steps to make sure that their sourcing is ethical and sustainable.
Holding themselves accountable is, you
which
know.
which is what the defense they came out with, that they didn't know, because it's such a complicated supply chain that you don't really realize what's going on the ground.
Yeah,
but also because if they did, then their products become even more expensive, because if you need to go and check your sourcing and where everything is made, it will make it more expensive, right? Because you have to, you'll be more transparent, but there's a cost to that.
Always.
And I think that's the issue, is brands may not be willing to be transparent because they don't want to invest the money that it's going to take to do that. And I think that's where ethical fashion brands differ. Most ethical fashion brands, you know, they focus on sourcing. So they actually spend time going to meet the people that are making their products, and they know how their products are made. But that also means that adds cost. So consumers need to realize that, you know. So if you want the people and the processes and the sourcing to be ethical, that's why we're paying more. But you know that what you're wearing is not based on someone's blood.
Well, even if you say you're an ethical brand, who's to know it's not greenwashing? And we do know of companies who have come out and said, we're an ethical brand, when actually we take your word for it. You may not. So it's a lot of work for Fashion Revolution really out there.
Yes.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
It's a lot of work out there.
I mean, we were talking about, hey, how do we certify something? You know, like we were just talking about
It's like organic products, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing in terms of labeling, in terms of certification. We're still not. We're going nowhere. It's based on trust.
Yep.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave that. I will spare you that question. So if I buy secondhand clothes, does that mean I'm helping in any way towards ethical, you know, buying?
Definitely, yes. I think, you know, just as Sassy just mentioned, you know, it is expensive to buy, you know, something that's fair trade or something that's ethical. So if you really can't, what if you can't splurge? You know, I remember as a student, I believed so much in this cause, and you know, it's really my passion, but I can't spend, you know, $100 on a pair of, or even a t-shirt that's ethically made. So where do you go? And yes, secondhand shops, as long as you're not buying in ample amounts and in surplus that you don't need, because that goes, you know, directly against the whole idea of conscious consumption and conscious fashion. As long as you're still only buying what you need, definitely, it's an alternative. Clothing swap, also, that's something that we're going to be doing on Thursday in KL and on Saturday in Penang. Do your own. Get your friends together. Bring your clothing that you don't want or don't like and swap it with something else that you might enjoy more. At least, you know, this whole feeling of, I want something new, I want to wear something interesting, at least you can set that craving aside when you swap with someone else. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about recycling clothes?
I mean,
is that even possible?
I was just going to say, I mean, it sounds cliche, but like reduce, reuse, recycle is really like the best thing to do.
How do you recycle clothes? I remember my mom with her worn out t-shirts and stuff. Before I knew it, they become foot rugs. You remember that time?
Yeah, or like, you know, the cloth you used to
Yes, exactly, the rags and all of that. And then, but you throwing it out anyway at the end of the day. But you will have brands like H&M who, you know, collect tons of clothes and then, you know, let you buy new ones. Do you think that's a possible way forward for ethical buying and the fashion industry?
I think it is. I mean, it's at least, I mean, H&M, like you mentioned, you know, this initiative, you know, we didn't see that you know, 6 years ago. You know, this is something new. So even though I'm not convinced necessarily that it's, you know, the only and the best way forward, I think it's an effort. It is hard to recycle, especially, you know, if we're talking about textiles that are like polyester and you know, things that are chemically made, it's hard to recycle. Mm-hmm. So there's also that issue, you know, just recycling doesn't mean that you're scot clean and you're good and you're, you know, it's hard to fully say that I can recycle this.
Yeah, I mean, and that goes even for natural fibers, because even if it's cotton, but you're trying to recycle it, I mean, in the recycling, it's not easy to get back to what it was. So, you know, we kind of get to the question of, I think the biggest impact is reduce. Because you want to be able to reduce the overall number of what is already out there, because landfills, clothing is now what, the largest?
Yeah, the largest
component, really? Of landfills. Mm. So you have landfills filled with old clothes. So it's not like, oh, I give it away to a charity or to Oxfam or whatever, that it's actually going to benefit somebody. I think it's only about 10% of donated clothing that actually gets sold to charity shops, and then everything else either goes exported to a developing country or it goes into a landfill.
And even whatever is recycled, we have to remember that that takes energy too. Yep. That requires you know, a lot of not only manpower but resources to recycle. So just because it's recycled doesn't mean that, you know, we're protecting the earth by doing so. There's a whole other chapter that comes after while, you know, the recycling process is happening.
Okay. So let's go into Fashion Revolution Day on 21st of April, this coming Thursday. You've got the screening, the true cost. Where is that happening?
At the Impact Hub in Central D7.
Okay. How do we get in touch with you and how do we participate in this?
I think if you go on, the easiest would be Facebook. If you go to Fashion Revolution Malaysia, our Facebook page, all the information's there for the KL and the Penang events. Mm-hmm. And we always, you know, we keep you updated as well with what's going on, you know, in terms of the news and, you know, different updates in terms of fashion and what can be done, what you can do, easy things.
Fantastic.
That you can do.
Yeah.
People can email us as well at malaysia@fashionrevolution.org. But Facebook's definitely the best.
Yep. Get yourself updated there. I think education is priority at the moment. Mm-hmm. We need to know what we can do and what we shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
So I think that itself will help a whole load. So I wish you all the best, ladies, going forward.
Thank you.
Would you have a message for us, Laura?
Yeah, well, you know, it's easier than you think to just start thinking ethically. You know, it's all in the thought. So as long as the thought is there, it's a start.
Exactly. I think what we're trying to say is we're not here to criticize and make people feel bad and guilty. I think all we want to encourage people is to ask the questions, to think, to reflect. That's it.
Thank you, because I was starting to feel guilty, actually.
No.
Thank you both very much
for
joining
me
today.
Thanks.
Laura Francois and Sassy Bai Kimis from Fashion Revolution Malaysia discussing the revolution of sustainable fashion on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.